Good morning, Your Honors. Peter Stamatis on behalf of the plaintiff appellant, Paula Jackson, in this matter. As I'm sure Your Honors are aware, we appealed the entry by the district court of summary judgment on behalf of the defendants, school district and individual defendants, in Mrs. Jackson's Section 1983 case. As the court is aware, she's a school teacher who was injured by an extremely violent student while teaching that student.
How old was this little monster when he attacked her?
A fourth grader, Your Honor.
No, how old was he?
8 years old.
He was 8 years old?
Yes, Your Honor.
Wow, impressive.
In making the ruling granting summary judgment, the district court, in our view, construed a number of facts in favor of the movement when those facts should have been construed in favor of the non-movement.
What I see as a big problem you have is that the principal ordered her into the room with the kid. And if you were suing the principal, or if the principal were the policymaker for the district, you know, you'd have a really, really good case, but you're not suing the principal, and you don't have respondeat superior liability. So isn't it just the case that she voluntarily engages in this dangerous work, and it's dangerous, but she knows it, and what is there to say that the district is responsible? I mean, what?
We submit, Your Honor, that the district had a policy, and that policy was when faced with a threat from the student's parents of filing a lawsuit, what's called a due process lawsuit, in the event that the student was removed from the school, however frivolous that lawsuit would have been, that the school district, through its attorney, who had been present at a number of meetings, buckled and then directed the principal of the school, as well as others, to keep the student in the school, despite the opinion of all, sans the parents of the student, that the student be removed from the school. There had been a number of what are called IEP meetings relative to this student, the germane one occurring in May of 2007.
But isn't it legitimate for the school authorities to consider risk of litigation when they're deciding what to do with a troublesome child?
It is, but not in this situation, Your Honor. And this is a very fact-specific situation. What happened here is that while Mrs. Jackson's employment does have various challenges because she teaches and cares for challenging students, that job requirement does not require, and there's no evidence in the record anywhere, that her job includes having to sustain multiple attacks, having to sustain chair attacks, and so on and so forth. In the instant matter, Mrs. Jackson had complained a number of times that she was unable to handle the student, that he was getting larger, that his attacks were becoming more frequent, and in the months preceding the attack on her.
Well, why didn't she just refuse to have anything to do with him?
She had articulated to her superiors on a number of occasions that she couldn't deal with the student.
Say, no, I'm not going near that kid.
On the day in question, Your Honor?
At any time.
Mrs. Jackson didn't have a choice. The student had been assigned to her caseload, and accordingly.
Of course she had a choice. She just says no.
As a practical matter, were she to have said no, she's been employed by this district, it's her only job, the evidence in the record.
She's fired. But look, the essence, I mean, the court cases are one in which a person is in a custodial situation. He's a prisoner, or he's trapped in an automobile because he doesn't know how to drive, right? And the driver has been arrested. Those are the cases in which, even though the assault is private, it's not an assault by a government employee, nevertheless, the government has created this situation in which the person is trapped. But you know, when you get hired for a dangerous job, a police officer or something like that, you're exposed to private assaults. That doesn't mean that the police department is liable when you're assaulted, because maybe they told you to do something dangerous. But you don't have to obey, right?
Well, there's a difference.
Forcing you.
There is a difference, Your Honor, in between the situation with a police officer or, in the cases, the prison guards. That is inherently dangerous duty. They are armed.
One of these counselors to these difficult children is dangerous also.
Yes, but the district does have a specific policy.
But the point is, she's not imprisoned. She doesn't have to deal with this kid. They can't force her.
That's true.
Very different from the situation where you're an inmate in a prison. You can't leave, and they're not protecting you against against violent inmates. Then you have no recourse. But she had recourse. Like any employee, I mean, military, of course, would be different, but police officer, fireman can always refuse to endanger himself, even if he may be jeopardizing his job, but that's not the issue.
Well, we would submit that is sufficient coercion. Mrs. Jackson losing her employment.
But then you're going to have a zillion cases. Anytime a police officer or fireman is injured, he'll say they didn't give me proper armor. They sent me to a dangerous neighborhood, or, you know.
I would say that if the court rules in our favor, that there would not be a flood of new cases. This is a very fact-specific situation. There had been a repeated...
But what's the difference? Look, there are all sorts of dangerous police assignments. They send a police... They tell a police officer to be an undercover agent, pretend to be a drug dealer, dealing with all these drug gangsters. That's very dangerous. So what if the police officer says, look, this gang is really dangerous. I don't think they'll believe me. I think they'll suspect I'm a police officer. And his commander says, well, sorry, you're going to have to do this. You want to keep your job. Well, I don't think that gives rise to a 1983 suit. He has a choice.
He has a choice, but I would say again, Your Honor.
How is that case different from this case?
Because Mrs. Jackson is not a law enforcement. She is not signed up.
She's also not dealing with drug gangsters, but she is dealing with unruly 8-year-olds. And
yes.
There is some danger there. And if a particular 8-year-old like this one is very dangerous, she should just refuse to have any contact with him.
Well, in hindsight, perhaps that's the case, Your Honor. However, when she was ordered into the room by her superior, she had obeyed the order and she had gone in to deal with the child who was in the midst of one of his episodes.
Thrown her into the room, yes. That's like our snake pit case. Yeah, it's throwing someone into the snake pit. But if you just say to the zookeeper, you know, I'd like you to clean out, if you have the snake pit, they're all cobra, they're all poisonous, rattlesnakes, cobras. But you go down there and clean it out and probably survive. Right? And then he'd say, no, I'm scared. I'm not doing it.
Well, all we could say to that, Your Honor, is that there is evidence in the record of the family's, Mrs. Jackson's financial situation at the time. Her husband was unemployed at the time. She was a sole breadwinner at the time, a wage earner at the time in the family. There are pension issues and so forth. And that for her to have refused at that moment to comply with the directive from the principal could have jeopardized all of that. So while it's not physically throwing Miss Jackson in the room,
but now you want to make the school district liable on the basis of particulars of Jackson's financial situation or what have you, which the school may not even know about.
Well, and then beyond that, let's get beyond that. Even if we agreed, when you look at the standard you have to meet for a constitutional violation, you have problems. because even if we give you that the school district created or increased the danger, even if we give you the district's failure to protect her from danger was the proximate cause of her injuries, the third prong you have problems with. The district's failure to protect shocks the conscience. That's a pretty tough standard. And here the principal went in, talked to the kid, calmed him down, and that was the point that he had her come in. And there have been numerous, you know, this isn't a situation where there hadn't been conferences. Conferences have been requested, or the complaints of the teachers have been ignored. They have been working with this situation. It's even disputed whether or not that the meeting terminated because the mother wasn't there and they wanted both the parents, or whether it was because the lawyer was there. So address that shocks the conscience, because that's what
certainly.
I think. I don't think you meet that.
I submit that we do, Your Honor. And specifically, if the court examines the facts that we put into the record, what the court will find is that a couple of things. During the year before this event took place, there had been countless episodes with this child where he had injured others and or thrown chairs and so forth. No one was adequately trained to deal with the child. Mrs. Jackson had indicated, yes, you've taught me CPI, which is the headlock technique that teachers are to use, but I refuse, as do the other teachers, to use them on this child because he's too powerful. In May, some 10 months before the incident, they had a meeting, the IEP meeting. The IEP team is 10 people, Your Honor. Teachers, a speech therapist, counselors, and so forth relative to the child. The IEP team includes the child's parents. A vote is taken. Everyone on the team says the child should be transferred from the school. Not only can we not handle the child, not only can we not handle the student, but the principal himself says, I am worried about him, not only him getting an education, he's in a room by himself, it's not the right environment for him, and I'm also worried about teachers, students, staff being injured by this child.
That's Why didn't she sue the principal?
That was a strategic decision made at the beginning of the case, Your Honor.
What does that mean?
That was a...
It means you don't know. Go ahead.
So,
why didn't she sue the kid?
That was another decision that the family had made, that suing the child and or his family would not be in her best interest.
Do they have money or insurance?
Yeah, I'm happy to comment on it. It's not in the record, but I'm happy to advise the court. Yeah, the father of the child is in the construction business. We understand that the child does have assets. Mrs. Jackson was frightened by the family. The father had made certain threats. She had been frightened by the family over the years, and she thought it was not in her own best health interests, frankly, to engage in litigation against the family.
What is her current health situation?
Mrs. Jackson suffers the results of her closed head injury. She has cognitive disabilities. She's present here today in court, Your Honor. She has tremors in her hands that have persisted since the injury. When she had fallen, when the chair incident took place, Mrs. Jackson was thrown back and she hit her head at the base of her neck on the ledge of the whiteboard, which then she blacked out, and then some minutes later awoken to look through the window of the door of this room that she had been in to see others looking, to, you know, are you okay, that sort of thing, tentative, scared to come in with the child who was...
Now, you mentioned this May 25th conference. This was in 07, and then in 08, he returns for the school year 07-08, so he returns in the fall, and some of the meeting notes show some improvement, that the incidents are down.
We would.
And it's moved more verbal than physical. At least that's what the reports say.
Yeah, we would.
But there's still incidents occurring on a regular basis. Is that right?
Yes, the evidence that's in the record is that the incidents may have come down one or two, but the principal himself had testified that that when he was told that he ought to keep the child at the school because the incidents had come down, that he scoffed at that because the child was still, quote-unquote, off the charts as compared to anyone else at the school and was still a threat to others. Additionally, during that next year when he was at the school, while there may have been one or two or three or four fewer incidents, there still were numerous incidents, and that's when the chair throwing really was ramped up. I see my time has run out. Unless the court has any questions, I thank you for your time, as does Mrs. Jackson.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Stamatis. Ms. Hinkle?
May it please the court, Dawn Hinkle on behalf of Indian Prairie School District 204, Howard Krause, Stephen Dashner, Judy Hackett, and Sharon Tate. I would like to correct one item right away. The student was actually 9 years old at the time of the incident. Okay. Yes, it was correct that he was in fourth grade. He was 9 years old. In this case, the district court was correct in granting summary judgment for the defendants on the plaintiff's substantive due process claim. In general, under the law, the Due Process Clause does not require a public school district to act affirmatively to protect people from private actors such as the student in this case.
But this student had a long, you know, this issue is shocking the conscience. This student was very problematic, and in this May conference, everybody said he should not be at this school. He should be at, I can't remember, some kind of therapeutic setting. He gets readmitted back to the school, even though the incidents are down some. He's still throwing chairs. I mean, at what point should it shock the conscience, or doesn't this shock the conscience? I mean, this wasn't a surprise. This was like repeated time after time after time.
There were quite a few incidents. I think plaintiff does exaggerate them. Especially in responding to the motion for summary judgment, she used a summary that wasn't in compliance with Federal Rule of Evidence 1006 because she didn't even state where the summary came from. She didn't state the documents on which the summary relied. She didn't prove that they were admissible, and she didn't state the accuracy of the summary. The actual documents do show some incidents of physical contact, about less than 20. Including some minor injuries. The principal, when his deposition was taken...
Less than 20 over what time period?
It was over the time period between when he had entered kindergarten and the time period when the plaintiff was injured. So we submit that plaintiff has exaggerated the incidents. They really aren't as bad as they look. The principal in his deposition testified that a lot of times when they were reported, the verbiage that was used... was more extreme than the actual incident, that when people said he threw a chair, he actually pushed it, or his usual thing with the chairs was to pick it up about 3 inches off the floor and swing it. Plaintiff did herself testify that there were two incidents when he picked it up above his head and actually threw it, one of which was the incident in which he was injured. All that being said, I think even if what the plaintiff has submitted is all true and admissible, and supportable, it still doesn't shock the conscience. Plaintiff is a public employee. She took the job knowing that she would have to deal with these difficult students. She kept the job knowing that she would have to deal with this student, and even after injuries that the student inflicted, there were some bruising to her knee, a tendon was stretched in her arm, her back was injured, and she kept the job after that. The other thing,
so could that be a reflection on the fact that she had to keep the job?
It could be.
You know, I mean, that she just didn't have a choice. I mean, everybody doesn't have a lot of options, and especially these days in this economy. Although this wasn't, I mean, this was a couple years ago when all this happened.
Right, but those circumstances that counsel talked about were not created by the school district.
I understand.
We didn't terminate her.
But I'm just saying, in terms of you're saying she stayed and she got bruised and she sustained all these injuries, so
right.
She needed that job.
Right, and it doesn't raise it to the constitutional level. It's not a constitutional violation. It's a workers' comp case. And, you know, it's horrible that it happened, but it's not a constitutional violation. She did file a workers' comp claim. She was compensated. The case is actually still open, but she has received compensation for lost work and injuries and some legal fees, is my understanding. The other thing here is the district had a countervailing duty to educate the student. The district could not refuse to educate this student. Under the Individual with Disabilities Education Act, the district was required to provide a free appropriate public education to the student in the least restrictive environment. And that means that they had to maintain him in the regular classroom to the extent appropriate. Now, there may be a disagreement about whether what the district chose was correct, but
I think it's pretty clear it was incorrect.
Yeah.
It turned out to be an unfortunate decision.
Well, it was pretty obvious from a lot earlier.
Mm-hmm. Right, but it should not be a constitutional violation for the district to choose to follow the law, especially the plaintiff alleges here that the district consulted with its attorney after the initial placement change was discussed in May of 2007, and that the district's attorney, who is not me, by the way, looked at the documents. The documents did show that the number of incidents had decreased and that they were becoming more verbal rather than physical. They were advised, according to the plaintiff's own allegations, that it would be difficult to win a due process. The district shouldn't have to choose between violating the student's rights under IDEA and violating the plaintiff's rights on a substantive
due process. But there was this option of this alternative learning school.
There was, but the student doesn't disappear either. The
people
at the
alternative. Oh, I understand that, but isn't the point of the alternative learning school that you have people that may have more skills, you get more professionals in there, and of course, someone who's teaching in that kind of environment is expecting that you're going to have kids of this type there.
You're right.
And so, that's different than just that this was a regular public school, even though I understand the requirements of the law, but there was an option. So it wasn't like if the school didn't keep him there, they would be violating the kid's right. They had somewhere to put him.
Well, I think that
theoretically, at least,
the potential violation of the rights was what the parents raised, which was you can't take him out of the regular environment. It's not appropriate because you can educate him here.
Even though he was being educated by himself in one room.
How
long had that gone on?
That happened at the start of his fourth grade year.
Was he sort of some big shot, the father of this kid?
No, not that I know of.
He seems to have intimidated the school district.
I think that the school district is very collaborative. They were trying to work with the parents. They were considering that the student over the summer was going to continue working with a home therapist. He was going to start with a new doctor. There was going to be a medication change.
They'd put people's personal safety ahead of that.
I'm sorry?
You'd think they'd put people's personal safety, not just the teachers, but the other kids, ahead of this dream of integrated education for kids with serious mental problems.
I think they were very concerned about people's safety. The student was assigned a one-on-one aid.
I don't think they were.
You don't think they were? Mm-mm. I think the record shows that they were. They put a number of supports in place. They were working with the parents. There was a behavior support plan. They were constantly taking data. They were revising the behavior plan as needed.
Was there any other counsel said there was no other child exactly like this in the school? Was there anybody like him or that came close to him? That was a statement counsel made.
I think the evidence in the record was that he, on the end of the spectrum, he was kind of on the more severe end in terms of his
kind of
issues.
Or he was on
he
the
was.
Severe. And
he was.
Set the standard probably
he was.
On the severe end. So there was nobody worse than him at the school.
Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
Not that I'm aware of. If you look at the case of the Sixth Circuit case, Hunt versus Sycamore, it was a very similar situation. In that case, it was an eighth grade student who was 5'8" tall, 150 pounds. Very, very similar situation, and for some of the same reasons that I've already talked about, the court in that case found that there was no substantive due process violation because, again, it was voluntary employment by the plaintiff. She took the employment knowing that there was a risk of injury, and the district had the countervailing duty to educate the student under IDEA. I was going to talk a little bit about affirmative acts. Plaintiff has alleged two things that he says constituted an affirmative act which created or increased the danger. The first is the alleged order by the principal to go attend to the student on the day of the incident. That is disputed. The principal himself said that the plaintiff volunteered to do that. That's an issue of fact, but it's not a material issue of fact, because even if the order was made, it did not increase the danger to the plaintiff because she was in the same situation as she was before. It's her job. She needed to educate and educate the child and help him access his education. The other affirmative act alleged by plaintiff was the district's failure to follow the alleged recommendation of the IEP team in May of 2007, which is not actually an affirmative act. It's a failure to act. And
let me go back, excuse me, just one more thing. She wasn't the only one that was injured by this child, right?
No, she was not.
There were other staff. How many other staff members were injured by him?
Three that I'm aware of.
And how recent, is this over that same four-year time span?
Yes, it is.
And how many had been injured that particular year, that particular school year?
That I'm not aware of. I believe the student was suspended at least once that school year.
For this kind of behavior?
Yes, right. The other issue here is the issue of the district's liability. The district cannot be held liable on a respondeat superior theory. There's no evidence here of any policy of the district that was enforced or any widespread practice or any action by a final decision maker, which in this case would be the Board of Education. There's no evidence of that, and so there could be no liability against the district. Also in this case, I would submit that the individuals are entitled to qualified immunity because it wasn't clear under the case law that what they were doing was violating the plaintiff's rights. And in fact, under Hunt, it seems to be clear that they were not violating the plaintiff's rights. Hunt was.
Why are you talking about qualified immunity?
Because the individual defendants are entitled to qualified immunity. It's another reason to affirm the district court's decision in this case.
To find qualified immunity, we'd have to find that there was a constitutional violation.
Correct. And for that additional reason, the plaintiff can't go.
That's what you want. Right. Go ahead and ask for it.
No, I'm just saying that that's an additional reason why the district court's decision could be affirmed against the individual defendants in this case. You don't understand.
You're asking for something that you don't want.
Right.
Okay, forget that then.
It's an intelligent approach.
That is all I have, unless the court has additional questions.
No. Okay, well, thank you. Thank you very much, Ms. Henkel. Mr. Stamatis, anything further?
Very briefly, Your Honors. I heard counsel indicate that the process with regard to keeping the student at the school was collaborative and inclusive and all that business. And I would just direct the court to what the principal himself had testified to with regard to the reason why the parents wanted the student to remain at White Eagle Elementary School. And what Principal Zeman testified at his deposition was that he thought the parent did not have the best educational interests of the student at heart, but that the parents cared more how it looked to everyone in the neighborhood, mm-hmm. as they didn't want mm-hmm. their child to be the only child in the neighborhood going to a different school. Mm-hmm. And from that was born the threats of lawsuits and the decision to keep the student at the school, which led to, of course, the injury to Mrs. Jackson. So we submit in conclusion that we do have sufficient facts to take the case to the jury, and we ask Your Honors that Your Honors allow us to do that and allow Ms. Jackson to have her day in court. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Stamatis.